Our second reading today comes from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 1, verses 18 to 25, which can be found on page 56 of the New Testament in the Pew Bibles, and indeed does pick up where our first reading left off. Zechariah said to the angel, "How will I know that this is so? For I am an old man, and my wife is getting on in years." The angel replied, "I am Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you and bring you this good news. But now, because you did not believe my words, which will be fulfilled in their time, you will become mute, unable to speak until the day these things occur." Meanwhile, the people were waiting for Zechariah and wondered at his delay in the sanctuary. When he did come out, he could not speak to them, and they realized that he had seen a vision in the sanctuary. He kept motioning to them and remained unable to speak. And when his time of service was ended, he went to his home. After those days, his wife Elizabeth conceived, and for 5 months she remained in seclusion. She said, "This is what the Lord has done for me when he looked favorably on me and took away the disgrace I have endured among my people." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Well, I heard it recently observed that human beings are only born with two fears. That's it, just two. Isn't that kind of hard to believe that of all the fears we have in our lives, we have only been born with two of those? And the two fears that we're born with, one is the fear of loud noises. You guys have gotten over that one, good job. And the other one is the fear of falling. And if you spend any time around an infant, you will have observed these things in due order. Even the slightest of loudest noises will get them to shudder, and even the most unhelpful handoff will get them to shake as well. And so these two fears are baked into us as we come into this world, but yet then we have all these other fears in our lives, don't we? And so if we only are born with two, that means that the rest of them come to us from human experience. They come to us from our lives. Whatever reason we have them, there is an explanation of something that has happened in our life, whether we know what it is or not, that creates those fears. Now, these fears that we have in our hearts and our minds, they do change the way we see the world, don't they? They operate in our hearts and minds in a way that shift the way we see the world, to shift the way we understand our experiences, and of course then change the way we see the future. And the reality is these fears are powerful in our lives. These fears are with us in almost every moment that we have in some way or another, knowing or unknowing their impact. And so we live with these fears in our lives. But we don't have just fear in our life, do we? We also have hope. We have hope that the fears will not win. We have hope that the fears are only part of life and that hope is with us in all of our life as well. Now, the gift of hope we have is something that in particular, as people of faith, believe comes primarily from God's source of hope in our life. We experience the gift of hope in our lives in many times and in many places, but especially so when we gather in God's name and in the church, and when we see God at work in the world, we experience a sign of God's hope. And at this time of year, we celebrate indeed the very coming of hope into our lives. The very coming of hope that we celebrate in particular on Christmas Eve in the birth of Jesus. And as we find our way from here to there, we find our times indeed in a time of waiting, in a time of expectation to celebrate yet once again the hope we have that came in Jesus and the hope we have that the fears in our lives will not win, but that God will win with hope. And that's what we celebrate in this season. But the reality is that these fears that we have are pretty big in our hearts and our minds, and they don't just go away because we wish them away. They don't go away just because we want them to go away. And a cursory look at the headlines or a scroll through your news feed on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or just a conversation with a psychologist or a review of the latest information about human behavior, and you'll find that we are filled with fears. We're filled with chronic anxiety. And that the level of anxiety and the level of fear that we're experiencing today has never been seen before in human history. And this is not a comment about any particular one thing, but a collective experience that we're all having. That it seems that there's so much fear in the world and so little hope. So much fear in the world that seems to grab at us and so little hope that seems to guide us. But this isn't the first time in human history where there's been a mixture of fear and hope. And in fact, there was a time in the life of the people of God where there was a significant amount of fear in their lives and a lack of hope, or a seemingly decreasing amount of hope. And that was at the time right before Jesus was to come into this world. We heard the beginnings of this story just a moment ago with the gentleman. His name was Zechariah and his wife Elizabeth. And they were part of the priestly leadership of Israel. Zechariah in particular was one of the priests. And Elizabeth was born of one of the priestly families. They trace her lineage back to Aaron, who was the partner of Moses in the time of the Exodus. And so what we hear from Zechariah and Elizabeth is a snapshot of what Israel had been experiencing for themselves for a long time. And around 400 years or so, they had been wondering if God was going to be at work in the world again. They were wondering if God had forgotten them, because for the preceding 400 years, and we would benchmark this from the end of the Old Testament to what we consider the beginning of the New, a 400 period between Malachi and Matthew, God had not done much. In fact, Israel thought God had been silent. The prophets were not coming about anymore. There was no new word from the Lord. And in fact, they had wondered if God had abandoned them. And so Zechariah was one of the priests that was carrying on a bit of hope. He was carrying with and for the people a sense of hope and a sense of trusting that God would be at work in the world once again. And so Zechariah was called into duty as he was a priest of Israel. And in particular, at this time, he found himself in a very important position. Now, he had the opportunity to do a once-in-a-lifetime task. And that's what's interesting about this moment that Zechariah had, is what would have happened is that the priests would have gathered during the time of offering of sacrifice. And in particular, this offering they reference as incense. And what they did was they would have subdivided the year into different segments. And the priest group that you were in had a two-week rotation. And then your group would serve for 2 weeks and then be done. And there was a special task, this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, where you would be selected to go and offer this particular sacrifice, the incense offering, in the Holy of Holies, the most inner sanctum of the temple. The temple was subdivided into a couple main sections. There was the part where everybody could go. There was the in-between part where some of the priests could go. And then there was the Holy of Holies, the place where they believed God lived. The place where presumably the Ten Commandments, the Ark of the Covenant, if it was still there, would have been in this place. God's very presence in the world where God dwelt. And once in your lifetime, you would be picked to go in and offer the sacrifice. What they did was they took all of the priests who hadn't been yet selected, they put their names in a hat, and well, maybe not a hat, but they put their names into a lot, and they picked it out. And once your name got picked, your name didn't go back in. Kind of like the ancient priestly lottery, you know? You didn't have to buy a ticket, you had to be born into it, but anyways. And so Zechariah had his name pulled, and he would have been very excited, but he also would have had some fear. Because little did he know, or little would we know, but what they would have done is they would have picked his name, everybody would have been slapping him on the back, giving him congratulations, and also then a wish of hope. Hope that he didn't die in there, because that was their concern. There was concern that if God showed up and if God acted out or if God said something to the person who went in there, they would presumably die instantly. Because if you've heard about the glory of the Lord showing up before, specifically what happened to Moses in particular, Moses saw a fraction of God's glory, and Moses went from a young man to an old man. Sounds like being a pastor, but anyways, he found himself with a fraction of the glory of the Lord shining on him. And he went from young to old. Their concern was that they would die when they went in there. And so what they would do is they would tie a rope around the waist in case you were to die. And then if you didn't come out, they would pull you out, because they didn't want a dead person to be in the most holy place on the world. Quite the mixture of hope and fear, if you don't say so myself. So the reality is that's what Zechariah went in to do. And he went in to offer the incense offering, and he had an encounter with the angel Gabriel. Now, it's hard to tell what exactly happened in this moment, but he found himself in good company, and he got this message that God was about to be on the move again. He got this particular message that there was going to be someone who would come ahead to prepare the way for the Messiah. And in particular, that he, Zechariah, and Elizabeth, his wife, would then have a child who would prepare the way for Jesus to come, prepare the way for the Messiah. Gabriel told him that he and his wife would become the parents of John the Baptist. And what they heard in that moment, what he heard in that moment, was that God was bringing hope into the world and that his son would prepare the way for hope to come. And that his fear that God would not be at work in the world ever again was no longer one he had to worry about. His fear that God had abandoned the people was no longer one that was founded. Rather, he could live into the hope that God was on the move and that God was going to bring about the great rescue of the people, that the Messiah that they had long been waiting for would arrive. Now, Zechariah, as we hear, had an interesting encounter with the Gabriel angel and after he got this news. I really hope that the ways in which I talk about my wife's aging doesn't get recorded into world history, but he goes and says, this can't be true because my wife is getting on in age. I cannot comment on any of these things except for the fact to remind us that they had an understanding of fertility that was connected into behavior and divine intervention that we know is not quite the way it actually is. But we take it for an understanding that they understood God to be at work and that God was doing something special and that God was bringing about hope. And his punishment for not believing, according to the text, is that he was mute then for the entire 5 months of his wife's unexpected pregnancy. That sounds more like a punishment to her, that he can't talk to her, but that's neither here nor there. But the reality is that all of a sudden, he went from having all the fears to all the hope. All the fears that God had abandoned them to all the hope that God was there with them. And when we gather to celebrate the coming of Jesus, and as we prepare ourselves through this Advent season and this mixture of expecting Jesus to come and celebrate his birth and also knowing that he has come, we can live into the hope that God gives to us. We can live into the hope that fear does not have the final say anymore. There are real fears in our lives that don't go away, but there are real fears that with hope in our hearts can be put in perspective. When we understand that there is hope in our lives, we don't have to let fear win the day. We can let the hope that God gives to us remind us that God is at work in our lives, God is at work in the relationships that we share with one another, and that God is at work in the world. And even though it seems at times that the fears will outweigh the hopes, the beautiful thing about the remembrance of Jesus and the celebration of his coming is that we know God has been at work. God has been at work in this world, and God continues to be at work in this world. And that indeed is the reason that we gather in this season. We celebrate that hope will win, and fear does not. So when we gather in this season, hopefully we can do a couple things to help us understand that this hope is here for all of us, that the hopes and fears of all the years indeed have been met in Jesus. And so I encourage you to consider just a few things that might help you remember what we're about this season. And the first is just simply for all of us to remember the reason for the season is the coming of hope. We need to remind ourselves of that because we are human beings that can have these fears in our lives that can sideswipe the hope. And so if we can just remember for ourselves that we are in a season of hope and celebration of that, that helps us to remember the purpose of preparing for Jesus to celebrate his birth again. The reason that we celebrate his coming is the coming of hope, and then we also celebrate the hope of his come again, the final defeat of death. So if we remember the reason for the season, that will help us so much. Now, the other thing is if we can reframe for ourselves the reason for the season, that helps us to put into perspective what we are ought to be about in this season. If we can remember and then reframe it, then we'll help understand that it isn't about all the things that go with the Christmas season in and of themselves, but it's about the celebration of hope. We can reframe the way we approach things. We can reframe the conversations that we have. We can reframe the interactions that we have so that they're filled with hope and not fear. And when we allow that to happen, the reality of God's grace and God's hope becomes more and more real to us and more real to the people around us. And in this season, as we go forward, the last thing maybe we consider is to reposition the reason for the season in our lives. Now, this one might have a literal impact for our lives. As we think about repositioning where we are in life and where we go in life, perhaps we also can think about repositioning some parts of our life. And in particular, thinking about your holiday celebrations, the Christmas ones to come. Maybe there's a way that you can reposition just one thing that you do on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day or whenever the Christmas celebration is that can bring focus to hope into the center of the gathering. Maybe it's you have a family of mixed information, or excuse me, we all have mixed information. We have you have a family of mixed sense of faith, mixed sense of religion, and so this year, your one little thing you do is you have a prayer before dinner. You can read a written prayer. You don't have to make it up as you go. Repositioning that in the center into the gathering could be helpful. Maybe you literally reposition one of your decorations. If you have a nativity set, you've got it in the corner. Maybe you move it out to somewhere that's a little more prominent. I don't know what it is, but I think you're smart and good-looking people, and so you can figure out for yourselves what is the one thing you can do to reposition hope in this season. Little advice, though. Just do one thing, because you don't want to do all the things, because you know what happens when we do all the things. Everybody thinks that you've become a religious, you know, kook, and over time that's okay, but like not all at once, right? We want to be able to be heard and be understood by our friends and family. So just think about what's the one thing. What's the one thing that feels true to you? What's the one thing that you think will speak to your friends and family? Because if we can remember the reason, if we can reframe the reason, and we can reposition the reason in our lives to remember that it's a season of hope, a season of expectation, the hope will win in our lives, and hope of God will win in this world. So let us celebrate that hope on this Sunday and all the Sundays of Advent and the Christmastide to come. Would you please pray with me? God, we thank you that you have been here. We thank you that you have spoken to us through your word, and we ask that you continue to speak to us in this Advent season. Gracious God, we ask that you continue to show us the ways in which you're at work in this world and help us to understand just how much you love us. We pray this in your Son's name. Amen.